This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 5th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 315. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this week's edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, this week's guest is Professor Benjamin Fung of McGill University's School of Information Studies. The Government of Canada finally banned government workers from using WeChat on government devices. What took so long? This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Finally, the Government of Canada has banned the use of WeChat on government devices. Early last week, citing privacy and security concerns, Treasury Board President Anita Anand gave the immediate order to remove the Chinese social media messaging and payment app from federal devices and to ban any further downloads. Anand also banned Russian-made Kaspersky antivirus apps. One of Canada's top professors on data mining and cybersecurity said the federal ban was overdue. Benjamin Fung of McGill University's School of Information Studies is one of many experts who urged Ottawa to ban WeChat for years. He pointed to warnings more than 5 years ago by the United Kingdom government. Professor Benjamin Fung is my guest on this week's edition of the podcast.
Yes, we have been demanding the government to ban this app for a very long time. Actually, it was, I think it's 5 or 6 years ago, the UK government gave the first warning on this, or official warning on this app. So it takes several years to, for the Canadian government to actually take some action. So the problem of this app is that we can consider from three aspects, right? Privacy, security, and trust. PST, we call that. First of all, this WeChat app has always requests access to location and all the files on the device, camera, microphone, and also the nearby devices. And as you mentioned, there's a very heavy level of censorships. And there are two types of WeChat accounts, right? So in this world, there are two regions in here. One type of account is opened or associated with a Chinese telephone number. Another one is the so-called the overseas WeChat account. So no matter if this is within China or outside of China, it is clear that the Chinese government and the Tencent company are monitoring all the communications. And the Citizen Lab from University of Toronto, they have a very extensive report on censorship. So even though the one, let's say you and me, if we are using WeChat in Canada, even though the message, we can still send any message to each of us, but the message will be still sent to China or still sent to Tencent for monitoring. So it will be used to train their AI model to recognize potential threat to the government. And so this is one concern that we have. Another concern is more on the security. So unlike Signal or WhatsApp that we are more familiar with, WeChat does not have the end-to-end encryption, which means that if you use WeChat, if you use a WhatsApp or Signal to send message to each other, nobody will see our messages. Even though there's a server, let's say WhatsApp or Signal, they cannot see our messages. But WeChat is different. WeChat does not have this end-to-end encryption. So if Tencent or the Chinese government wants to see what message we are sending to each other, they can see that very easily. And WeChat is also a super app. It's a super app. It has so-called many mini programs inside the app, which is also a flexible feature because it allows the third party to develop their own applications on top of WeChat. So, but this also opened up a can of worms for potential security issues because any third party can build any apps on top of it, and the privacy and security policies between those so-called mini program and WeChat is not very clear.
Now, the use of WeChat got some attention back a little over 2 years ago during the federal election. And of course, that story has only snowballed into this year. We finally have a foreign interference public inquiry. You analyzed it afterwards, after Kenny Chu from Steveston Richmond East lost his seat to Liberal Karen Baines. And Kenny Chu saw it happening during the election where WeChat was being used to spread disinformation about his proposal for a foreign aid registry. Go back to then about what was going on then and what you spotted in your research after the election.
So clearly the Chinese government was using WeChat or similar social media that is controlled by the Chinese companies to interfere our elections in Canada. When I say election, it's not limited to the federal election. We see interference at the provincial level, city level, even at the school board level. I would say it's actually easier to manipulate the outcome or to influence the election result at even lower level of government because it just requires less resources to see the outcome. So at that time for the Kenny Chu's case, there's clearly some disinformation about that candidates have been spread across WeChat. And we also manually take a closer look on the WeChat different groups, different WeChat groups. I would say in most cases, they are healthy. They are like talking about, you know, barbecue, going to dinner together, some ordinary Chinese communities on the social media. But during the election time, so during the critical moment, I would say, sometimes you will see another group of people will try to lead the discussions to promote or to discourage you to vote for specific candidates. So once that happened, the normal members in that groups will usually quiet down for a while because they don't want to participate in those sensitive topics. But clearly this is, yes, it is led by some organized groups. And it's also interesting to see that the timing that they push those posts, right? Sometimes, even though, let's say, you and I share some common interests, let's say on cybersecurity or foreign interference, if there are 10 posts out there, it is very unlikely that we will like those 10 posts together, right? Even though we share the same interests. But for those AI bots or for those human bots controlled by CCP, you will see that those accounts always likes the post together. This is called co-citations or co-referencings. And by observing this type of patterns, we can identify those bots.
Mm-hmm. Now, this year, we've also seen warnings from Global Affairs Canada, who has a rapid response mechanism. They've spotted foreign interference and disinformation used on social media, on WeChat, against Michael Chong, the Conservative MP, earlier this year. And more recently, there was a so-called spamouflage campaign that was spotted. There have been attempts by other governments and other messages as well. And of course, there have even been some accusations that the Chinese government is manipulating the discourse online about the October 7th Hamas terrorist attack in Israel, and then Israel's subsequent reaction with its military campaign inside Gaza, which has had a devastating effect on people living there. This is certainly, in many ways, cyber warfare.
Yeah. So, yes, sometimes it is very clear that those misinformation or disinformation is trying to, like a propaganda machine to support the Chinese government. But sometimes it's less clear. Sometimes they just want to initiate conflicts between two groups of people. They may not specifically take a side, but they want to initiate conflict internally in the free world, I would say. And sometimes they would like to, in addition to initiate conflicts, they want to support on one-on-one candidates. And yeah, so this is different types of information warfare or cyber warfare. And you can see that that type of actions, similarly, when Russians try to invade Ukraine at the beginning, they launched the this type of warfare first before they actually launched the physical warfare.
And I know that the government of Taiwan is being very careful and counting the days and doing whatever they can to make sure disinformation doesn't affect what's coming in the new year. January is the presidential election in Taiwan, and certainly cybersecurity and anti-propaganda are top of mind for the people in Taiwan.
Yes, Taiwan is, I would say they are very innovative to fight disinformation because they are at the front line to fight against the CCP government for this disinformation. They have many interesting techniques. For example, if we just keep saying that, okay, this is disinformation, this is not true, it may reach certain groups in the community, but may not be able to reach the younger generations, which are very, very, very important. When we talk about they are the first time voter in the elections, right? So in the Taiwan government, they have some emojis. They create some emojis to or some meme to indicate that this is a piece of disinformation. So whenever you see this meme, you know this is not true, or you may need to spend a little bit more time to look into that piece of news. So they are using these techniques to approach the younger generation. So they have many different interesting techniques. Yeah,
I know in the West our tradition, of course, is against censorship, and that the freedom of speech is about to bring the best, most accurate information to the top. But when you do have a foreign-owned media platform in such a way, there are also other dangers there of what that might represent.
Yes, I fully agree. So they are not just consuming the time, right? They have the capability to actually slowly change the one's perception on a specific issues, and the one will not even recognize that they are changing that perception, so that opinion on that issues, maybe just changing 0.1% per day, right? So just shifting from one view to another view. And by collecting the WeChat data, TikTok data, we can build a very good pictures on individuals. We know who is in the middle, who is on the far left, who is on the far right, who we can modify or change their opinion, right? And by doing that, to TikTok is a very powerful recommender system that has this capability. And I would like to also mention, I would like to take this opportunity to mention one more topic. I think everyone, or not many people, have already seen the CEO of TikTok went to the US Congress to give a presentation, right? And so he always emphasized that you can still search for anything or find anything about human rights issues on TikTok, right? You can still find Tiananmen Square events on TikTok. That is true, right? If you search for it, you can find them on TikTok. But that is not the most important part of TikTok. The most important, the most powerful capability of TikTok is the recommended systems, right? So it is still there, but they don't recommend to the user. So it will actually never appear to the user. So the DO was not lying, but he's not completely presenting the truth, the most powerful capability of TikTok. And he is hiding that point of view in there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Another thing, the communications from the federal government are they don't give direct advice to the public. They basically just tell the public in the communications that accompany the notice about the ban to be more vigilant and make your own personal choice. They're not expressing, they know a lot more than they're letting on, but they're not telling the public what they're letting on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, there are many ways to communicate with the Chinese community, and some of the channels, I would say, is not very effective now. So there are many, there are several Chinese radio stations, newspaper in Toronto, in Vancouver. But I would say they have been influenced by the Chinese government too, because they pretend to be neutral sometimes, but they avoid touching on sensitive issues. So I would say it would be nice if the government, if they want to communicate with the Chinese community, another way is to create or strengthen the CBC, maybe CBC Chinese sections. That will also help to the communications. Another point that we can, I would say for individual, for people, let's say some of the Chinese community, they need to use WeChat because that is the only app they can communicate with their friends and family in China. There are not many other alternatives. So if that is the case, I would suggest they install WeChat on a separate old telephone. So find some old telephone, and then, you know, it doesn't require too much CPU power to run WeChat, just a chat applications, and install whatever Chinese app that you need on single phone, but do not combine with other communication apps or email on the same device. So that will be a trade-off for individual if they want to improve their security and avoid being a target for foreign interference. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you again to my guest, Benjamin Fung from McGill University, social media expert on how everything works behind the scenes of major social media companies. And thanks again for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast.
Thank you for having me.
That was Professor Benjamin Fung of McGill University's School of Information Studies. What do you think? Email bob@thebreaker.news. Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Chinese blockade of Taiwan would cost global economy trillions, says Chris Miller. Chip War author predicts Chinese blockade of Taiwan would cost world trillions within two quarters. Due to the uncertainty, Miller said that companies and countries are re-evaluating the dependence of their supply chains on China and Taiwan and are finding it very difficult to completely insure themselves against China-Taiwan risks, but they have to because the costs are vast. In the Hong Kong Free Press, gay games Hong Kong is legal, top government advisor Regina Ip says, amid claims the event is a threat to national security. Regina Ip said the fact that the Gay Games Hong Kong was able to use a government-owned venue was proof that it did not break the national security laws or other legislation in the city. Her remarks came hours after around 20 self-proclaimed patriotic citizens filed a petition at the legislature to oppose the event, which runs from November 3rd to 11th. They claimed that while the Gay Games appeared to be promoting diversity and cohesion, it was, in fact, displaying, quote, invasive behavior, end quote. In Kyoto News, SDF evacuates Japan, South Korea, Vietnam, Taiwan citizens from Israel. An air self-defense force plane has evacuated 46 people from Israel to Jordan, the second such operation since the outbreak of the Israel-Hamas war last month. A KC-767 refueling and transport airplane carrying 20 Japanese, 15 South Koreans, 4 Vietnamese, and 1 Taiwanese left Israel on Thursday night.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Oregonian, toxic vapors will be deadly when mega earthquake hits Portland, report says, prompting call for regulation. A Portland State research report, commissioned by Multnomah County, concludes that a Cascadia subduction zone earthquake probably would cause the rupture of above-ground tanks and pressurized cylinders at Portland industrial facilities that store toxic chemicals. Such facilities built on liquefiable soil in the city's north and northwest neighborhoods would be especially at risk, and the toxic plumes they'd emit would likely spread to other neighborhoods and past the county's borders. In King 5, King County Water Taxi intercepts drifting barge as it headed toward Seattle waterfront. A fully loaded container barge was drifting toward the Great Wheel and the Seattle Aquarium when a King County Water Taxi intercepted the vessel. The U.S. Coast Guard was notified just before 1:30 p.m. November 2nd of a barge that drifted from Terminal 18 in the Port of Seattle toward Pier 66 in Elliott Bay. The Coast Guard said in a tweet that three tugboats regained control of the barge and placed it in tow where it was being moved to Terminal 115. 2 years ago, on November 15th, a barge crashed into Vancouver's Sunset Beach. It took a year to remove it. In the Times Colonist, American rescued from life raft had run out of food, weathered two big storms off Vancouver Island. The Souk fisherman who spotted him at first thought the life raft was a floating barrel. Ryan Plains said he could see something red about half a kilometer away. He at first figured it was debris, but he noticed reflective tape, which made him run out to get a pair of binoculars for a closer look. The crew called the Canadian Coast Guard, which came to pick up the man and eventually take him to hospital in Tofino.
That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
the Block Watch Society of British Columbia. Go to blockwatch.com for tips on personal safety, home security, and other ideas to prevent crime in your community. It's Crime Prevention Week in British Columbia until November 7th.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
You do, and they don't think you know, but I know that you do, 'cause your dollar ain't shit, and it's taxed to no end, 'cause the rich men, north of rich men.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 5th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 5th of November in 1968, Richard Nixon was elected the 37th president of the US of A? His 1972 trip to China in meeting with Chinese dictator Mao Zedong helped open China to the West. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. If you're in Canada, you can't get Facebook updates due to the Trudeau Liberals Bill C-18, so why not subscribe to the free newsletter? Or follow The Breaker News on Twitter, also known as X. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.